V-minus 88. Private jet, Milan to Denver. Sleep would come to Dan eventually. This was an inevitability during a long flight which followed a night as restless as the one he just endured, but not before he caught the last few minutes of a special ACN report on William Godfrey's imminent return to a position of unmatched political power. The resolute Englishman, former chairman of both the Global Shield Commission and Global Space Commission, was unquestionably the greatest political survivor since the late Richard Walker. Just like Walker had repurposed his Inner Space Defense Agency to keep up with changing times, Godfrey had succeeded in repurposing himself as the obvious candidate for a leadership role in three successive supranational organizations. The Global Contact Commission, in one sense, was smaller than its predecessors. It was certainly true that a significant portion of the world had aligned with the China-led Earth Liaison Forum rather than the predominantly Western GCC, and Godfrey made no attempt to pretend otherwise. In another sense, however, this element of competition made his role at the GCC the most important of his life. For just like a country, a planet could have no more than one true leader. Godfrey considered it his calling to represent Earth in any future contact scenarios, and he had never before been more determined to win a bloodless war than he was to win his standoff with Beijing. Emboldened by the economic, military, and cultural strength of his GCC's unwavering core members in the shape of the United States, United Kingdom, European Union, and Japan, William Godfrey would stop at nothing to see the ELF fall and Ding Xiang come crawling for a seat at the GCC's table in Buenos Aires. The special report closed with a replay of a speech Godfrey had made mere months earlier while contesting a leadership election with his arch-rival, Diane Logan, prior to the idea of the GCC first being floated and back when his immediate focus was regaining his position as prime minister after the GSC's collapse. Godfrey won that particular contest at a canter, surprising no one given the gravitas that came with his worldwide prominence in recent years, but it had since been claimed that he knew he would be quitting almost as soon as he stepped back inside number 10. He had known about the international plans for the GCC and had known he would be asked to lead it. This highly plausible theory held, and his participation in the leadership election was a message to the wings of his party who remained loyal to Logan or, even worse, to the risible John Cole. Cole, Godfrey's hand-picked successor when he first stepped down as PM to lead the Global Shield Commission, had resigned in disgrace, following uproar at his self-serving decision to leak news of Il Diavolo's collision course with Earth. His hand had been forced by Godfrey's calculated decision to expel his own nation from the rechristened Global Space Commission. Few survived making it onto Godfrey's bad side, and Cole's political career appeared to be completely over. The last Godfrey had heard, he was somewhere in Africa or the Middle East, using the weight of his former office to cash in on the desperation of political and business leaders seeking to add an air of Western legitimacy to whatever projects needed it most. Dan hadn't previously seen or heard anything about the supposedly famous Godfrey speech that was about to air. He did his best to stay away from politics year-round, so he thought he might as well pay full attention given that he had nothing else to do and his mind was already firmly back on the GCC-ELF standoff. If this speech was as relevant to current events as the introduction suggested, it was sure to be interesting. The speech, given in the House of Commons, began with Godfrey launching a seemingly petty attack on his rival for wearing workman's clothes during a recent photo op at a building site. Plenty of other British politicians had frequently done similar things in the past, and most saw it as a transparent but essential effort to present an all-in-this-together kind of message. On this occasion, however, Godfrey had pulled no punches in his own evaluation of the incident. "The men and women on that building site are from a completely different world than Diane Logan," he began, "and they know that better than anyone. Diane was born into opportunity utterly alien to those workers, as was I, and she would do well to stop patronizing the hard-working people of our country by pretending otherwise. The difference between Diane and myself is that I will look a citizen in the eye and stand before him as I am, with no apologies and no pretense. When I do so, I will dress appropriately for a man of my position, because I was born with certain opportunities and intellectual propensities which imbued upon me the ability to serve this great country as its leader. Diane Logan may have the ability to stand before an honest working man and lie to his face about her being a woman of the people, but I have neither that ability nor a desire to possess it. For I am not a man of the people, I am a servant of the people. I am the man for the people. I was without question born to be the leader of the people, and I make no apologies for stating that fact. Much of the house roared in support. This leadership contest is a distracting formality that our party, and far more importantly, our country, could do without, Godfrey continued. My honorable and right honorable friends, the matter comes down to this. I was born to lead, and lead I shall. Godfrey's closing sentence was an instant soundbite. Although seized upon by his opponents as a sign of his detachment and an implication that he believed others were born to slave away beneath him within the confines of an inescapable class structure, the comment went down well in the polls. The host of the special ACN report interjected at this point to state that many now believed Godfrey had made his Born to Lead speech full in the knowledge that he would be back in Buenos Aires before long to build the GCC from the GSC's ashes. Dan's tired mind, having missed this point until it was explicitly spelled out, agreed that this was just the kind of thing Godfrey would do. Love him or hate him, few could deny that William Godfrey was a grandmaster of political chess in a world where most of his opponents were still learning which pieces could move where. The very end of the ACN piece showed Godfrey dealing with the single most common question he faced during his effortless leadership victory over Diane Logan, the question of how he could be trusted to lead the country when it was now known that during his time at the GSC, he had actively suppressed data supporting the notion that the Kerguelen bolide event of a year earlier had been alien in nature. From time to time, it is in the interests of the public for certain things to be kept quiet while solutions can be sought, he said, addressing the strongly worded question which came from Logan herself. If you'll forgive my tone, Diane, do you understand what leadership actually entails? Difficult decisions and a weight of responsibility come with the territory you're trying to conquer here, and heavy is the head that wears the crown. Some have leadership thrust upon them, such as my good friend, Dan McCarthy. Tell me, was Dan wrong to keep from us what he did? Was Dan wrong to maintain our belief in a hoax perpetrated by Richard Walker and benevolently maintained by our friendly visitors from afar with their delivery of the third and fourth plaques? Of course he wasn't, as all right-minded people already understand completely. And on the other side of the line, Godfrey went on, what of our former colleague, Mr. Cole, the man who vacated the position we're competing for after disgracing himself and the United Kingdom by revealing news of Il Diavolo's trajectory? Something else which was being kept quiet for very good reasons of public order. Tell us, Diane, in your black and white world, are we to understand that Dan McCarthy is the villain and John Cole the hero? The ACN host reporter returned to the screen for her sign-off. And while we are seeking John Cole's views on this first anniversary of Contact Day, with so much uncertainty about how this GCC-ELF standoff will play out and just what would happen if the messengers were to return, it's difficult not to wonder what Dan McCarthy must be making of it all. Trust me, he thought, sighing as he positioned his body for whatever sleep it could manage. You don't want to know.